You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 2nd of March. The playoff madness took place last night in Portland. We'll look at the impact of that game and what's coming up this weekend in all the big games. Minnesota's in town tonight. We'll break down that matchup with the Jazz, and we'll head to a pack Friday, looking at the Thunder, the Pelicans, and the Wizards, plus your questions, coming up on Pack Friday. It's all today on Locked On Jazz. How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA Insider. Thanks so much for tuning in. Glad to have you aboard. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, a look behind the curtains, some geeky numbers, a lot of geeky numbers today as well. I'm excited to welcome a new sponsor into the program today. It's a Utah company. It's always an honor when someone decides that they want to be involved with us, and then it's even more fun when it's a neat company. It's called Mazuma USA, and Mazuma USA is going to help you out. Here's who Mazuma USA is. If you hate doing your books, oh, all of us, and you hate trying to find 12 months of information, oh, all of us, and your business is 1 to 5 employees. Okay, now that's not all of you anymore. So here's the deal. If you have 1 to 5 employees and you're not using Mazuma, you're losing money and clarity. For $75 a month, you get bookkeeping, reports, unlimited consultation from a CPA, personal and business tax returns. You get reminders throughout the year to have discussions about taxes. You have your own CPA, your own bookkeeper, and once a quarter, you do your tax planning. All right, here's how it works. You sign up. You have an orientation call with your bookkeeper and your CPA, and immediately they're running through your stuff, getting your first set of reports. Then every month you get a report. Every quarter you get a tax planning call. At the end of the year, they do all your taxes for you. There's no contract. There's no cancellation. There's no hidden fees. And you get all of this for $75 a month. Give them the promo code LOCKED, and you get a nice little discount. So 801-980-2102. That's 801-980-2102 for a free consultation with MazumaUSA.com. That's MazumaUSA.com. Utah-based company. It's pretty incredible stuff. If you have 1 to 5 employees and you're not using Mazuma, you're simply losing money, clarity, and ease. So welcome to Locked On Jazz, Mazuma. Glad to have you aboard. And with the promo code LOCKED, you get 25% discount on their services. So it's Mazuma USA. Welcome to the program. All right, let's get to last night. It's always a fun one. The Blazers and the Wolves played, and I got a bunch of tweets from everyone last night, like, who are we rooting for? I honestly didn't know. I mean, that's what's so crazy about the West is I don't know. I mean, on one level, we look at this, and Minnesota is at is a few wins ahead, and so, you know, and they have the softest schedule. They only have 4 games left. It had a winning percent, a winning opportunity projection below 40%, and this was one of them. And tomorrow's another one of them. So. Or tonight's another one of them. So I think we wanted Minnesota to win if we had to really get down to it because, frankly, Portland had better chance falling out of the playoffs. But right, to be totally frank, I didn't think either team really had much of any chance to fall out of the playoffs. If I actually was thinking about this last night, I did this exercise. Of these teams, Minnesota, San Antonio, Oklahoma City, Denver, Portland, New Orleans, Clippers, Utah, if I had to rank them in order of, I think, most likely to make the playoffs, I think I'm going 1 Minnesota, 2 Portland of this entire group. 3 Oklahoma City, just because their schedule's so soft, they're playing so badly, though. 4 San Antonio. The way it's going right now, even though their schedule's tough, probably 5 New Orleans, 6 Clippers, 7 Jazz, 8 Denver. And Denver's pretty solid. So I guess if I on that level now, and maybe Utah above the Clippers and maybe Denver above the Clippers. I mean, we still don't totally trust the Clippers, but they have 14 games in which are either 60-80% win probability or 80-100. So last night, Minnesota lost in, but it's now they only have 3 games left the rest of the year in which their win probability when we did this was below 40%. Portland has 11 games in that territory of 60-80 should wins. They're 2-0 so far in those. Here's what we have this weekend of games of importance. Minnesota, Utah, this is Utah's a 74% win probability in this game. Has to win. Utah cannot afford. Utah's whole advantage, they have 14 games with the, this is one of them. Sacramento on Saturday has 65 win probability, so actually less on a back-to-back. But again, needs to win. Portland and Oklahoma City play, but Oklahoma City plays Phoenix first and then plays Portland. Portland's heavily favored. We're rooting for Portland in that game. Oklahoma City, as I would have, is a lower chance of making the playoffs. Denver plays Memphis and Cleveland this coming up this weekend. Back-to-back, Memphis 63 win probability, Denver 29. And then the Spurs have the Lakers at a 76 win probability. That's not a game that I would expect that they're going to lose, but they're off a little bit. So, and I'm sitting on my island that the Spurs are in no way set right now. So I think that's keep an eye on that. Last night, Minnesota Portland. What's interesting about this game is that Minnesota actually didn't have a very good offensive game. 99.7. By the end of the night, Taj Gibson was out with a hip injury. Jimmy Butler was out as well, and they were playing a 5-man unit. They hadn't played a single minute all season long. Let's take a look at the matchup with Minnesota. Our next segment, we're going to actually try to see if we can find out if there's any area where the Jazz rotation things have gone wrong. So Minnesota's starting five had played 1,086 minutes together. Like, there's nothing close to that in the league. Their top three lineups all had Jimmy Butler in it. Now without Jimmy Butler, going into last night, so this is not up to date. Note to Doris Burke, who may be listening to this today, this is not up to date. That their lineup of Jeff Teague, Andrew Wiggins, Bielitsa, Taj Gibson, and Kat had only played prior to last night 116 minutes and 6 games together. Now, if Gibson can't go tonight because of the hip injury, then they really are thin. Last night, they basically played 7 guys and then Tyus Jones 13 minutes for 8 guys. But if I guess Cole Aldridge, who destroyed us and knocked us out of the playoffs once before, would finally get back in their rotation, and Gorgui Dieng would start. But that's their lineup that they closed with last night simply had just not played together. Their offense is 12 points per 100 possessions better with Karl Anthony Towns than it is when he's off the floor. Incredible. He played 41 minutes last night, had 34 points, 17 rebounds, 2 assists. Your first reaction is, well, it doesn't really matter because of Rudy Gobert. Actually, because Karl Anthony Towns can go out on the floor a little bit, first of all, I wouldn't be surprised if the Jazz didn't match favors to him. And the second one is that Towns has done great. He's had a 20-10 in 3 straight games against the Jazz. He has had a double-double in every game. And his last meeting of 2017, he had 32. So in 8 games against the Jazz, Towns has got averages 22 points, 12 rebounds, 53% from the field, 47% from 3. Gobert's no slouch. He's 12 of 12 in those. Andrew Wiggins is the interesting one. Andrew Wiggins has been terrible against the Jazz in his career. A lot of that, I always gave credit to Gordon. I thought Gordon handled Wiggins about as well as anyone could, had a specific game plan on how to make him play. He took 76% of his jump shots last year were off the bounce and played him that specifically to make sure. Now, and this, so that was coming into this year, he was 36% in his last 7 games. And the 2 games this year, he's 11 of 29. So it's no longer a case that it's just the Andrew Wiggins against Gordon Hayward. He just doesn't play well, or the Jazz have a game plan against him that they have executed now with multiple people. Maybe it's Gobert at the rim as well. They just want to get there. But Andrew Wiggins is 51 of 140, 36% against the Jazz. Few twins. Timberwolves notes. Third best team shooting in the restricted area. Number one in paint non-restricted. Right? So that's really interesting because we have Rudy Gobert. We're actually not great at defending the restricted area for the season. We're 16th best. We're 6th best at denying those shots. We're better when Rudy's in the game. I think everyone knows that. The numbers specifically when in the restricted area, teams shoot 60% when Rudy's in the game, 64% when he's out. In the paint non-restricted areas where he actually has his biggest impact, 36% when he's in the game, 40% when he's out. Jazz defensive rating since Rudy's come back is below 100. We talked about this yesterday on the program. I actually had a good conversation with Ron Boone and yesterday a little bit about this. You know, the Jazz, we're all talking about how inconsistent the Jazz are. The Jazz are inconsistent offensively because they don't have a star. They're consistent defensively because they have very consistent defensively when Rudy plays because they have a star. The defensive rating that the Jazz are putting out every night right now is astronomical. I mean, since Detroit, 86, 95, 96, 96. Okay, again, 101 is Boston, which is the best in the league. The league average is about 106, 107. So this is the Jazz run after Atlanta. Detroit, 86, then 95, and the Warriors, 96. Phoenix, 96. Bad night against the Spurs, 111, they won. San Antonio was on a back-to-back where we got in at 4 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning. Okay, wow. Pelicans, 102. Grizzlies, 93. Hornets, 98. Blazers, 97. Spurs, 100. Phoenix, 100. Blazers, 100. Mavericks, 90. Houston, 99. We're just inconsistent offensively because everything – actually, I talked to Quinn about this yesterday, and Quinn's comment was our bandwidth is really small. Everything in our bandwidth has to be working right, and then it goes. And if somebody's askew, then we watch. Then it goes the wrong direction. And so, if you've watched us this year, some of that is Rudy Gobert's in the game, then Derek Favors takes over, and something that works there, and then Rudy comes back. Now that same thing doesn't work anymore. So now everyone's got to learn. It takes a little while. Jay Crowder comes in and replaces Rodney. That's a little different. That's very much the reason we're seeing kind of this consistently inconsistent performance from the Jazz. A few other notes on Minnesota. They're 26th in shooting the corner three. I love the corner three. They're 26th in the amount of shots in the restricted area. So that's part of the – Karl Anthony Towns is going to play outside. They take the third most amount of mid-range shots – be interesting to see. I mean, they're going to get these shots against the Jazz the way we play defensively. They're last in the NBA defending the restricted area and 24th in denying shots in the restricted area. 28th in defending the mid-range. 25th in defending the above-the-break three. That's the three-ball shot, and specifically the above-the-break three, is what has gone wrong for us recently. Keep track of these notes and then watch the game and see if they come to fruition. That's always the fun part. There's a lot of geeky numbers here today. And even more so coming up with Pac. We're going to do a weird thing next where we try to see if there's anything rotationally we can find. But so let's go to where the offense has struggled just shooting-wise. And we just mentioned that so Minnesota's 26th in defending the above-the-break three. Here's our above-the-break three shooting in the last three games. This is what's gone wrong. 6 of 21 against Portland, 6 of 25 against Dallas, 4 of 25 against Houston. Okay, I mean, this isn't complicated. We're 16 of 66 on above-the-break threes since coming back from All-Star break. The theory there is that rhythmically the shots don't feel the same. Now, some of that, let's not kid ourselves, some of that, you know, as inconsistent as Rodney was, he still was a collective 40% three-point shooter, and his shot was straight down the barrel above the break. The other one, and this has been my theme all week, is, you know, regression to the mean, right? So in the win streak, we couldn't miss. And there were some things about that that were a bit unnatural. So in the win streak, we were 80. Let's see if I'm right on this. We were 88 of 208, I believe. Okay. So we were 88 for 42.3% on above the break threes. The league average is about 35%. We're right there. Now, well, that's, you know, are we awful all of a sudden? No. But suddenly we're not hitting at the same rate as we were. But if you take the collective period of time of what we have, we're still above, we're at 37%. We're still slightly above what our average is. I haven't done this in a while, so I thought I'd remind you. Just, it's kind of a fun little note. Okay, restricted area team shoots 63%, so 1.3 points per shot. Paint non-restricted is 39%, 0.7, so call it 0.8 points per shot. Mid-range is 40.5, so 0.8 points per shot. The corner three is 39%, and the above the break is 36%. That's the money ball concept. Somebody last night on Twitter said to me, can you just call it the paint? No, actually, because it's actually one of the worst statistical things we do in the league. The restricted area is averaging 1.25, 1.3 points per shot, and the other's averaging 0.8. They're not even close to the same thing. Today's show is brought to you by Murdoch Hyundai at 4646 South State Street. Blake and the crew down there do a great job. I'm driving the Sonata right now. Have driven the Tucson, have driven the Santa Fe, loved the Santa Fe, loving the Sonata too. I love what my daughter said the other day. It feels like a luxury car. It really does. Same way I felt about the Santa Fe. I've told this story before, that when I first got there, they were telling me about former BYU quarterback Robbie Bosco was searching around looking at the Lexus and ended up buying the Santa Fe. And at first I was like, you're nuts. But when you start doing the comparison shopping of what you can actually get for your dollar and then go drive it and see what it actually feels like, other than the fact that the logo looks differently, you're wondering, why would I possibly pay for the extra $35,000? And if you live a life in which that's important, you go for it. But I'm going to save the money and use it for skis, bikes, kids' trips, all sorts of fun things, or just not spend it. But seriously, the Hyundai brand, 100,000-mile Hyundai Assurance, so you know they stand behind it, and then you just get this incredible value with all the bells and whistles. The Santa Fe blew my mind, and the SUV, the Sonata, has been the smoothest ride with great interior space and just feels like, daughter said it well, feels like a total luxury car. Visit Murdoch Hyundai at 4646 South State Street. When you go to the Murdochs, you get the no-regrets buying experience. They're going to do everything they can, extended service hours, all the things they can control to make sure your experience is great, five-day price guaranteed for you, as well as free car washes and oil changes for life. It's at Murdoch Hyundai, 4646 South State Street. Say hi to Blake. Tell him he should be coming to more Jazz games. He's got that nifty little sweet thing, and he never comes. So when you see Blake, say, Locke says the Jazz are really fun. Go to more games. All right, here's a fun exercise. I thought we'd just do it together. There's a great website called popcornmachine.net, and it runs you through what the Jazz had on the floor. Actually, every team, every night. So what I thought would be fun is let's look and see if we can look at the game flow and see if there's any specific time in which things have gone awry for the Jazz and see if we can discover. Because the big question is, okay, in the last three games, and the Jazz haven't been playing as well. And playing as well was an insane concept. What has happened? So in the Portland game, Portland just jumped on them early, 15-6 run. Jazz just got hit. Jazz kind of worked their way back on a 10-0 run with virtually the same group on the floor. Royce O'Neal and Jay Crowder were in. Portland hit them again on a 16-6 run in the second quarter. For the majority of that run, it was Gobert, Mitchell, Rubio on the floor together with some other pieces. Crowder, Jarebko to start it. Nothing totally specific. Quinn actually tried to substitute in and out of it. Royce O'Neal was in there for a little while. His stint lasted. Joe Ingles came back in. It just kind of was a 16, 6 run. Starting lineup got blitzed again on a 19-6 run in the third. So those are the, and again, Quinn subbed out of it, but Rubio went out early. And this is as much as anything, actually, on this game. If you recall, Rubio's got the hip. He's playing, can only play limited minutes. Quinn has to build his whole substitution pattern around Ricky's minutes on the floor. And so I when I look at this, I don't see a huge trend. But let's look at it and see if something else happens that looks familiar. We go to Dallas where the Jazz won, but no one felt that they played particularly well. Though if you've watched Dallas since, they've given other teams a fit. Rick Carlisle's a brilliant head coach, and I just don't think you look good against Dallas. I'm not as bothered by the Dallas game. And I also would point out a little bit, I'm playing to the masses here because I'm actually not. Again, I go to the fact that we're a great defensive team, and if our defense is good every night, that's what it is. And when we have bad offense nights, that shouldn't surprise anyone. But I just ran through all those defensive numbers for you. Well, we're not playing well. Well, I don't know if that's actually true. Like, so in Dallas, our starting lineup started great. It was 10-2 run, and then we went to the bench with Rudy and Donovan staying on with Jarebko, Crowder, and O'Neal, and suddenly went on an 18-6 run. That set open part of the second quarter, though, things went awry twice, an 11-3 run, and then Dallas goes on a 15-0 run with Mitchell, Ingles, Gobert, mostly Crowder, and then intermixed of A.B. and Royce. So no Gobert. Gobert's on for that stretch, and they go on a 15-0 run. Starters go on a 7 run, so this was a great night for the starters. And then the Jazz close with pretty solid 8-0 run to close it with Mitchell, Ingles, Rubio, Gobert, and Crowder. So Portland blitzed the Jazz early. This group goes in with Rubio now being able to play a little bit more extended minutes, not have to worry about it quite as much. This group goes and gets them, and then the Jazz close well. Not only theme in here that's now happened twice is that early second, that is that second quarter kind of blip that happened now both games. So let's go look at our next one, which was so long ago, I can't hardly remember. No, I just can't find it right now. The game against Houston, very different team than Dallas, obviously. And they hit us early on a 12-2 run. Okay, so a little bit's matchup. You know, I've said this a lot about Favors and Gobert. It works as long as you're not dependent on it. If you're totally dependent on it, then you got a problem. Now, here's the wacky one. Remember that whole second quarter thing? Like, oh, that's not working. We got, okay, except for that same kind of group went on a 13-2 and an 8-2 run against Houston in the second quarter to go take the big lead. Mitchell, Rubio, Favors, Crowder, Jarebko with Alec and O'Neal interspaced in there was the primary lineup. The second one had a little bit more Rudy and Joe. And then the starters had a good run, an 8-3 run against them in the opening part of the third quarter. What got blitzed was a late third quarter lineup when Gobert starts in the midst of it, Gobert goes out of the game. It's always bad when you've lost momentum, they have to take him out. But it's largely with Crowder playing some of the three, O'Neal, Jarebko, the bench unit doesn't hold with Donovan. Donovan, point guard, has not been great recently, as we've talked about. So there's not, like, for people who are trying to zero in on one thing in the rotation, there just doesn't seem to be that one thing. Donovan without Ricky right now is not surviving the way it did earlier in the year. So that's the only one that I would jump out there. And I don't want to overplay that, but I think we're just asking a lot out of Donovan. And that's where, of all weird things, Neto, who's out again, dude's so tough. I was convinced yesterday he was trying to fake everyone out of practice and try to let everyone know he was all right when he, like, wasn't. And he's just so tough. So when you look at Rubio and Neto, or excuse me, Rubio and Donovan since the break, the Jazz are plus 4 when they're both on the floor and minus 4.5 when one of them's off. Or excuse me, just when Rubio's off. Again, they're plus 4 when Rubio's on, minus 4.5 when Rubio's off. So this is an area where right now the Jazz, give Donovan air. Like, it's fine. Donovan is shooting 25% from 3 with Rubio off the floor, 40% with him on. So he's helped right now by having Ricky. And that's the natural thing. It is Pack Friday, and we'll hit that coming up here in just 1 second. Today's show brought to you in part by Intercap Lending. Had a nice conversation with Steve Carter over at Intercap Lending about how things are going. There's a bunch of calls on things. Here, I want to make sure you know this, that when you use Intercap Lending and you close your mortgage, that's when you get your appraisal for free. They're not just giving you a free appraisal. I apologize if that was at all misleading. For one of our listeners, it was. But let me tell you more about Intercap Lending. It's a 40-year mortgage company that's come to Utah. And they're a direct lender. They do some really cool stuff. They've simplified the process. We use them to refinance our mortgage. Frankly, I did it in season, which if you know me at all, I don't get anything done in season. I have no friends in season. I just work and ski. And for me to get a mortgage done is a testament to who Intercap Lending is, that they are going to make it as easy as possible. They service your own loan. They have a long-term relationship for better customer service. This allows them to do a lot of things. One, if you're a veteran, that's about half their volume. They do great work on VA pricing and can do a lot of things for veterans. Two, because they're a direct lender, if you have a difficult loan, so if you have business assets that make it difficult, if you have multiple properties that make it difficult, if you have low credit, if you're self-employed, let Intercap Lending take a look at your loan. Give Steve Carter a call, 385-885-28. When you close your mortgage, they'll give you that appraisal for free. That's big value. 385-885-28. Intercap Lending, NMLS number 190465. For more information, visit intercaplending.com. Download the app. You can get pre-approved so that you're ready to roll. Give it to your realtor, and then you can roll. Available in 44 different states, so not just in Utah. Intercaplending.com. All right, Pack Friday. We'll just do our quick review of the top 10, bottom 10, and then we will look at some specific items that I wanted to check on today. All right, the hottest, the bet. This is, by the way, the Uber commercial with LeBron and Durant talking about how they're the number 1 and 2 players in the league. If I'm Steph Curry, I'm pissed. Steph Curry's Pack is 4.6. Durant is 3.7. Harden is 3.4. Karl Anthony Towns, we see tonight, is 2.8. And LeBron's 2.8. Those are the five most impactful offensive players. Anthony Davis is 2.7. If you're new to Pack, Pack is points above average created. It's the offensive metric I use to judge players. It's based off average play. It takes your offensive scoring opportunities you use in a game, compare you to an average player, and how many points are you scoring for your team above average. Here's what I would tell you. If I list to you the 10 best, or right there, I just listed the top six, you would agree with all six. So now if you start to hear somebody different at 7 and 10 and 12, rather than saying you don't believe in the number, I would reevaluate what you think of that player. So Steph's 1, Durant's 2, Harden's 3, Karl Anthony Towns is 4, LeBron is 5, Anthony Davis 6. Those all pass the eye test. Clint Capella is 7. The most underrated player in the league right now. That's why they're 31-1 when he plays with James Harden and Chris Paul. Kyrie Irving is a 2.2. Giannis Antetokounmpo is a 2.0. DeAndre Jordan is a 1.8. Enes Kanter is a 1.0. And Dame Lillard is a 1.8. For a pure point guard, that's incredible. That's why they're going to make the playoffs. Portland and Minnesota, I both think, just make the playoffs. Minnesota, some things, they could lose their confidence without Jimmy Butler. The following list is Steven Adams, Klay Thompson, Kevin Love, Rudy Gobert, Chris Paul, Lou Williams, Jonas Valanciunas, Kyle Korver, Montrezl Harrell, and Jimmy Butler. It's a 1.2 loss of Butler. Taj Gibson's 1.2 as well. I mean, they're the third best offensive team in the league for a reason. Curry's the only one over four. Harden and Durant are the only ones over three. Every year we seem to have three guys over three. And then we have our next six, which gets us to nine, which is right where we've always been of over two. Giannis, Kyrie, Clint Capella, Anthony Davis, LeBron. Those are the best. Let's take a look at the worst offensive players in the NBA. And then I have a few topics I want to look at. Dennis Smith Jr. is now surpassed Lonzo Ball as the worst offensive, most negatively impactful offensive player in the league. Not worst, most negatively impactful. Lonzo Ball minus 2.5. Chris Dunn, remember all that talk in Chicago about how Chris Dunn's turned the corner? He's not. Don't buy that. He's putting up numbers because somebody's got to score. Deion Waiters minus 2.0. He's out though. Russell Westbrook minus 2.0. Russell Westbrook is having a awful season. Should not be considered all NBA. Should not be considered an all-star. I'm serious, guys. He's terrible offensively this year. He's scary. He comes at you. He puts up numbers. It's all done poorly. Josh Jackson is minus 2.0. Juwan Evans, the rookie, minus 1.9. They're all rookies. De'Aaron Fox, minus 1.8. Avery Bradley, minus 1.8. Carmelo Anthony, minus 1.7. Of the veteran players out there, the two worst are Carmelo Anthony and Russell Westbrook, and we're wondering why we think Oklahoma City is supposed to plug in. John Wall, minus 1.7. Marcus Smart. Andrew Wiggins, minus 1.7. So Wiggins is taking about four or five less shots. It's good for now. Butler's out. He takes more. It's going to be bad. And Dennis Schroeder in Atlanta, minus 1.7. Frank Ntilikina, minus 1.5. Those are some of the worst. All right, let's take a look at three storylines that are going on in the league and see if we can discover anything from them from PAC. One of them I just led to. And Doris Burke just tweeted at me saying she wanted one of these. What did Doris just tweet at me? Doris tweeted at me that she wanted to know whether Washington could turn it around when John Wall gets back and what. John Wall is a minus 1.7 pack player. Okay, let's go back to the beginning we talked about. We have nine guys that have a pack above two in the whole league. John Wall is minus 1.7. So when John Wall injured, John Wall is minus 1.7. I mean, it's worth noting, I don't think John Wall has been this poor. He's never been efficient. But I don't think he's been this poor in every season that he's ever played. But he certainly is this season. Last year, John Wall was a minus 0.4. Okay, with all the other things he brings to the table, you might be able to handle that. It's not great. You know, I think you know I like above-average offense players. That's been my thing. The year before, he was a minus 1.2. So, I mean, this is a guy that's been a pretty negative offensive player. Just his possessions, doesn't count assists. You can decide what you think of that. But so they take him out of the lineup, and now you increase Bradley Beal, who's positive. Otto Porter's positive. And the other one that's interesting is Gortat's average. Jody Meeks is negative 0.3, but close to average. Chris McCullough's a minus 0.4. Tim Frazier's a minus 0.4. And Jason Smith is considerably negative, but if he doesn't play, which he doesn't all the time, then almost they're all a little bit like average. No one's taking negatives away from them. But to make up for John Wall's negative 1.7 is really, really hard. Now, some of their guys are playing a little less well offensively without Wall. That doesn't usually happen, frankly. I'm not the biggest believer in that phenomenon, but it is taking place a little bit. Bradley Beal, Marcin Gortat's offenses, outings are not great right now. Satoransky's playing out of his head. Jason Smith is not playing, so that helps them. Otto Porter's very efficient. Meeks is well above average. Beal's a little bit on below average, and Kelly Oubre's actually been way below average picking up some of those things. So now let's look. So the point on that is it's not surprising that they've suddenly gotten better. We kind of touched on Oklahoma City a little bit. This is I kind of said this all year long. Everyone's like, Oklahoma City's going to click in. I think this is who Oklahoma City is. Steven Adams is great, 1.8. Paul George is 1.0. He's great. Alex Abrines is average. Andre Robertson didn't hurt him. Patrick Patterson's average. And then they got these two guys at the end. Carmelo's a minus 1.9 and Russell's a minus 2.0.
Like, that's really hard to overcome. And in turn, yeah, Locke, but Locke. Okay, wait. Let's take a look. Like, what? The number one premise that I have in all of this is that if you have a high usage player who's negative, and you already have a high usage player, then that's like the worst thing you can possibly have. So Washington on the season offensively is now the ninth best offensive team in the league. If you go back before John Wall gets hurt, they're average. Oklahoma City is the 12th best offensive team in the league. It's pretty good for them. And that's a tribute to Steven Adams and Paul George overcoming the Carmelo Russell Westbrook. And their defense is 7th best in the league, which is impressive. Let's go look at New Orleans, see if we can dig into any reason why they've gotten so hot. It's actually kind of, without DeMarcus, it's a pretty neat little roster. Because what they have is some really good shooters. Anthony Davis on fire, plus 2.7 for the season. DeMarcus was positive, 1.2. Offensively, certainly, is Darius, 1.0. Nikolai Mirotic, 0.8. Etuan Moore, 0.7. Guys you just don't think of. Drew Holiday's positive, which he hasn't been in years. And then they've got some negative guys, and Rajon Rondo is a negative 0.7. Ian Clark, who's a negative 0.5. DeAndre Liggins is a minus 0.2, but that, at least that's limited. In their last 10 games, first of all, Anthony Davis is going bananas, right? We'll look at the top 10 teams. Anthony Davis is actually interesting, 1.7 pack. I thought it'd be higher. And Rondo's negative. Ian Clark is negative. And Mirotic and Moore aren't playing great, but they're getting Darius Miles. Drew Holiday's been solid. A little surprising, actually. Not this is not showing that their hot streak makes a lot of sense. Maybe they've been noticeably better defensively, or they've just won a ton of close games. Let's look at the last 10 games. Who the hottest players in the league are? Kevin Durant is the hottest at 6.5 pack. Karl Anthony Towns, the second hottest player in the league, 4.8. James Harden, 4.5. Kyrie at 4.2, Nikola Jokic at 4.0, and Lonzo Ball only played 2 games, though. The excitement, not there. Steph Curry, Bojan Marjanovic out of Indiana, Eric Bledsoe, Dame Lillard, Kemba Walker, Danilo Gallinari in the 7 games he played. Some other guys that are hot are Will Barton, Jamal Murray, LaMarcus Aldridge, Clint Capela, LeBron, Montrezl Harrell, Rudy Gobert, Satoransky in Washington. Going down to the coldest players in the league. And we have Dennis Smith Jr., not surprising. Carmelo, Donovan Mitchell, third coldest player in the league over the last 10 games, minus 3.4 pack. Tim Hardaway, CJ McCollum, surprise, minus 3.2. Dylan Brooks, minus 2.9. Lauri Markkanen, I mean, the rookies are just showing up here, aren't they? Michael Beasley, Robert Covington, Denzel Valentine, minus 2.6. So those are the coldest players in the league. Let me see if I can take one quick, see if there's any good questions that came in. I hit the ones that I thought I was going to. Let's see. Does Pac take turnovers into consideration? No, it does not. Why are Udo's minutes down when he is such a positive impact? Because you'd have to bench Favors or Gobert to give him minutes. Mario Hezonja, it's an interesting one. He's actually beginning to play pretty well, or at least having moments. When I've listened to Dennis Newman in Orlando the other day, and he made a few plays. Hezonja is a positive 0.2 pack. That, to me, jumps out. He's only going to free throw line 6% of the time, but he's a positive pack. I would be interested. Sixers and Celtics, by the way. Mitchell and Snyder, haters, rookie of the year coach that claims their teams and players are so significantly better. I'd like to see what the numbers say. Maybe they're right, maybe they're not. I don't know what that question is. A quick look at Boston and their pack. Kyrie's 2.2. Greg Monroe's been positive. Jason Tatum's plus 0.7. Very, very impressive. Don't dismiss that. Al Horford plus 0.6. Daniel Theis 0.2. And then Jaylen Brown is negative 0.2. Aaron Baines is negative 0.6. Terry Rozier is a negative 0.7. Marcus Morris is negative 0.7. And Marcus Smart's minus 1.7. They're not a great offensive team. Joe Johnson and Rodney Hood since they left Utah. I don't have that. It's only been 3 or 4 games. Do you think Donovan can become a positive pack player? Is his style play likely to keep him negative? He's going to have to alter as he gets older and figures out how to play. Rookies, you like the fact that they're making mistakes because then they can learn from them. But right now, I mean, he's a negative pack player and he's in a slump. And when he's in a slump, it gets significant to the point which he's, as we just showed, the third most negative pack player in the last 10 games. So he'll just have to adjust. He's going to have to keep going to the free throw line. He shoots a high rate of threes. He should be fine. Anything else? A lot of Neto questions. We talked about that a lot in yesterday's show, so I think I will hold that. All right, that wraps us up. That was a fun show. Thanks very much for being a part of it. That is your Pack Friday. Have a great day.